So now that you've ascended the heights of the Minneapolis DFL, can you pledge that your stepmom will never trip over you getting out of bed?
I think that situation requires some nuance.
You don't have to respond with sincerity. I apologize for throwing that joke at you, Conrad. I don't see it as a joke. Okay. Well, it is hilarious. It is objectively hilarious. As a Democrat, I'm allowed to say that, Conrad. Free speech.
This is a real thing.
None of you have the balls to stop this.
I've got plenty of time. I have nothing else going on today.
We're in the Wedge neighborhood right now.
We're back for another episode of the Wedge Live podcast, DFL endorsement season edition. We're not really talking about candidates. We're talking about everyone's favorite process, right? Everybody loves talking about process. But don't worry, there's controversy ahead. Deborah is going to talk about a harrowing experience she had at the recent Minneapolis DFL City Convention. I'm joined by Deborah Copperood, who is a volunteer, a cookbook author, a podcaster. Her Substack is called Deborah Copperood Shops at Target, which is great. And the new Minneapolis DFL chair, Conrad Zbykowski, who was recently elected at the city convention a couple of weeks ago. Conrad, you're now at the helm. You've ascended through the ranks. And I use those phrases because, Deborah, you said you don't like those phrases being used about the previous DFL chair. You chastise a reporter at the Star Tribune for using those phrases on your Substack, Deborah Copperood Shops at Target.
I did.
Why do you have a problem with those phrases?
I think it portrays the role as more important and power wielding than it actually is. I think that the chair of the Minneapolis DFL is important. Thank you, Conrad, and congratulations. And thank you so much for your time and your energy and your service to the party. But Conrad in his new role and Brianna in her, who is the outgoing chair of the Minneapolis DFL, like they don't make any kind of policy. They don't make laws. They don't pass anything that affects anyone other than organizing caucuses and conventions and facilitating the democratic process where people in the party can come together and make decisions about the party endorsements, resolutions, that kind of thing.
Conrad, you're just a grunt. You're just doing grunt work, and there's no glory in what you do. You're just a glorified party planner is what you do. That's what Deborah's saying.
It's definitely true that there's not any glory in this. I think it's important that when we're choosing which candidates we want to support or whether we're electing people at the state level, that's what parties are about. You know, parties are as old as this country, and having a way to get involved with people who are, you know, of like mind on certain policy issues or certain ideals is kind of what the whole name of the game is. So my role is to facilitate what members want to do. My role is not to pass some kind of resolution towards some policy goal. My goal is to help people elect the candidates that they support for a DFL endorsement. If there's 60% of members who support a given candidate, then we'll move forward and endorse and support that candidate in the primary or the general election.
Conrad, excuse me as we go to the controversy. Deborah was bullied outside the recent city convention, which went on so long. I made a good call by leaving early. This is where all the school board candidates are vying for the DFL endorsement. And it started at 2 for some weird reason. Why start a convention at 2? You know it's going to go late. Went so late, the school kicked everyone out. The convention just starts happening outside, which I don't think I've ever seen. Maybe it's happened before. And you said you had a bad experience. You wrote on your Substack about this experience. You said it was bullying. Like, can you talk about what happened? What was the underlying issue? And who you are and what you do with the DFL, so the Minneapolis DFL, your Senate district, which I don't think I have explained.
Oh, sure. Well, I'm just a volunteer. I've had a number of small potatoes roles with my Senate district and with the Minneapolis DFL over the years. And right now I'm not in any kind of elected party position. So I'm just helping out. I was a parliamentarian at the city convention that we're talking about. And the parliamentarian is there to support the chair. So if the chair has a question about the rules or the process, the parliamentarian is there as a resource to look things up if necessary. I also helped time the debate between the school board candidates. And I did a couple of other like piddly little administrative tasks. So when we were outside, first of all, to answer your question about the timing, I think maybe because it was a Sunday, that's possibly why it was held so late in the afternoon. And there were just, compared to other election years, there wasn't like that much business. It was just a few school board candidates to endorse. But all that was left was the endorsing of the District 6 candidates. And there, it was just like, if it were a chess game, it would be like a stalemate.
Right.
Because nobody was getting to 60%. And so there were like half the candidates on one side of a sidewalk and the other half on the other side of the sidewalk. And people were lined up in rows of 10. So it was like easier to count. I wasn't particularly sold on either of the candidates, so I actually switched sides, thinking that if we could just get a few more people on one side, we could wrap things up, which was a strategy that only I thought was helpful.
Yeah. Who are you? Who are you at this convention where both sides hate each other equally, and you're just like, I could take either?
Totally. Well, there was no like pot of no endorsement people. Otherwise, I should have just gone in that.
So I posted a link to your Substack and you said something like there's not much difference between the school board candidates in that race. And like one of my friends was very upset that you would describe it that way. So sorry to interrupt with that, but go ahead.
Oh, is that on Twitter? I'll have to go look.
It was one of the replies. Like how dare you describe this as not very much difference between the candidates? Both sides see it as life and death. And like, if the other side wins, it's going to be the end of Minneapolis public schools. That's kind of the attitude with the people who stayed past sunset. They're the diehards for each side.
So I'm just being wishy-washy and I'm wearing my delegate hat, my metaphorical delegate hat at the time, not an actual hat. So I had taken off my parliamentarian hat. I'm acting as a delegate because I got upgraded. I started out as an alternate. So I'm standing like down a hill in a row of 10 people and like this really big guy in the row ahead of me at the top of the hill is like shouting at the chair, just like shouting at the top of his lungs. Like I think he was saying point of order, and just insisting that because he was shouting point of order, he should be able to stop the entire convention and get everybody's attention. And I don't have my Substack in front of me. Deborah Copperwood shops at Target. so I don't remember the actual distinction of words, but then he was like, who's the parliamentarian? And then this lady next to me was like, you're the parliamentarian, right? And
oh, I
was
she like, gave you up. She gave you up.
I don't really want to deal with this right now. And like the chair's handling it. If the chair had a question, the chair would ask me. And the chair was super capable, knows Robert's rules way better than I do. He didn't really need my support at any time during the convention. So he's handling it. And this guy just like looks something up in his phone and he's like trying to like shove it in my face. There's my like, and so I like went and stood off to the side and I was like, sir, you are, I feel very scared of you. Like, I think I said that, like, I am scared of you. You are bigger than me and you are louder than me. Like, please leave me alone. So like those anxious feelings that I experienced made me go home. I had a hard time sleeping. I like to write a lot. That's how I like process everything that happens in my life. So this was, I just like typed everything out and like instantly felt better once I got it off my chest and onto my Substack, Deborah Copperidge Jobs at Target.
Yeah, I've had those experiences at like neighborhood meetings or
where
like not necessarily directed at me, but like it gets so intense and people are all shouty and everyone is upset and like you can't come down. The adrenaline is super high. So I can understand why you have written three posts on your Substack, Deborah Copperidge Shops at Target, in the past couple of weeks about your experience. You started with the story of the guy who was mad, and you're like, hey, man, if you want to change things, join up, volunteer to be in the DFL, that you change it from the inside. And then you had a follow-up post where you're like, I think it was everything bad about DFL conventions. And then,
well, kind of like why it's bad. It's not like it's not the parliamentarian's fault. It's not the chair's fault. They're like, Conrad and me, we want to help the party. So that's why the volunteers are there. There's like a lot of outside forces that make the process unsavory and really long and involved.
Conrad, how can you make this better? One of the things that irritates me is at a convention I went to, my Senate District 61A, we finally got to two candidates and like, oops, it's over. We're not even going to take a ballot on that one because the ballots take forever. One of the things that I was amazed reading Josh Martin's tweets of the city convention is how quickly the balloting was happening. It was like, well, we did one ballot and then 10 minutes later, we finished up another one, and I think it was because people were just standing in groups and you weren't writing down on paper. You're just like, hey, I'm over here with my person and just counting bodies to decide who supports which side. Is there any way to speed up the balloting process, do a little rank choice thing? Are you really as powerless as Deborah thinks you are to fix this situation?
Oh, can I just ask, are you in Frank Hornstein's district right now?
I am, yeah.
Okay, because I think that answers why the balloting was taking so long compared to the city convention, where there were four candidates at your Senate district and there were two candidates at the...
But it also felt like we just didn't get to enough ballots, because we got down to two candidates finally, and it felt like we should have the head-to-head vote between these two candidates and see where it shakes out. And if it ends after that, okay, I'm fine. But it felt like unfinished business for me.
Yeah, so there's two ways that we're approaching that right now. The first way that the Minneapolis DFL can do for itself is have in the temporary rules that are presented towards the convention, have the idea of just making things quicker overall. So there's a number of ways to do that. First of all, that was already done at on April 21st, was the idea that we could adjourn with no endorsement after the first ballot. So we already had that. That's actually more quick than many other DFL conventions, which sometimes require five ballots or something like that before you can end with a simple majority. So that was one thing that we did already. And then in addition to that, we're looking at the possibility of having in just those temporary rules that would be presented towards the convention, the idea of having a single ballot that is ranked choice, because there is ranked choice that's allowed under DFL rules. And so if we had an electronic ballot that was ranked choice, maybe take a little bit more time to fill it out. But then the going from five candidates to two candidates is, you know, just a simple arithmetic of the computer.
How do you stop me from filling out this ballot offsite? Like, I'm a delegate. I don't want to come to the school, but I'm going to vote from home. How do you stop me from doing that?
That's an excellent question. So the way that we stop you from doing that is that we have it as part of credentials. So credentials is the idea of somebody coming to the in-person convention, getting their badge, signing in, things like that. That whole process is called credentials. And so the state central committee, which is like the governing legislature of the state party, that body uses electronic balloting, and it uses this credentials check-in electronically. They do that for all of their in-person meetings. And so what we would be proposing is to have that same sort of thing possibly for city conventions, which could be very helpful because, you know, everybody can definitely imagine that you have, you know, either a contest for mayor or for city council. We've definitely had many situations over the years where there's many different candidates, and being able to have more of a single ballot to get to two or even one candidate, depending on the rules and how it's done, that could be a thing that we can employ. So that's the second one. The third one is actually being explored right now, where the State Constitution Committee is looking at having that single ballot process be part of the state constitution for jurisdictions like Minneapolis and St. Paul and Duluth. And so because we have much more contentious endorsements than most other units within the DFL, that we would have a more expedited process there. That's if it were incorporated into the state constitution, which is being worked on right now in terms of, you know, what the final proposal will be. That would supersede any rules that could be adopted or not adopted at a convention.
That's something I actually put in my post, was like support from the state party for the bigger conventions. I did not even know that that was a consideration of the Constitution Committee.
Awesome. Support in terms of writing rules. That's the limit of the support right now.
That would still be better than what the process is now, I think.
Conrad, did you explain how you're going to keep me from voting from home and not showing up at the convention?
Yeah, sorry. I'll repeat it for those at home as well. So the way that we stop somebody voting from home over the internet is that we check you in when you arrive in person. And when you're checked in, when you arrive in person,
so,
then you're
and so allowed. Your ballot won't count if you haven't shown up.
You won't be allowed to vote, period. It's the system is different than maybe you're used to in the past with Minneapolis DFL, where it's an actual username and password for every single attendee. And then the upgrading and downgrading of delegates with alternates and everything like that is all included in that.
So I feel like electronic balloting, ranked choice voting at conventions has been teased forever to the point where I think it's not going to happen. I'm tired of hearing about it unless you're going to actually do it. Like, why should I think this is ever going to happen? What is the obstacle?
I think there's two obstacles. One is any kind of rules, contentions that campaigns have. Some campaigns don't want to have ranked choice voting, especially if it went to a single candidate or something, because many campaigns want to have no endorsement and then move on to the general election. So
right. So it's the fact that one campaign knows I'm going to this convention, I'd have fewer delegates, and I'm the campaign that wants to gum up the works, prevent a result. And so like that feels like a problem we can never solve. One side is always going to feel weaker and feel like they are advantaged by rules that drag the process out so they can say, hey, guys, this is going on too long. We should go home.
And that's why I think the change to the state constitution is important. And that's why I'm hopefully going to be meeting with my counterparts from St. Paul and other jurisdictions that would be covered by this to make sure that if we do move forward with that state constitution amendment, that it's done in a very thoughtful way that incorporates ideas like Deborah has from her experience as a parliamentarian.
At Deborah Copperwood Shops at Target on Substack.
Can I add something? So if that interests anybody, that kind of work on the state party constitution, If you live in Congressional District 5 right now, the Nominations Committee is considering applications for the Constitution, Bylaws, and Rules Committee, and you can apply for a position on that very Tony position on the in the state party, CBRC, and get nominated to it and really, truly affect change in the party via the governing documents.
Yeah, I'm going to speak for my audience and say no one wants to do that.
Some people really do, John. I know that you don't, and that is totally cool, but some people get super into it.
See, I feel like people get involved because they believe in a candidate. And so these committees that help run the conventions, you've got volunteers from each campaign involved in setting up the convention. And like, there's no one side always has the incentive to say, we don't want this to work well. I don't know what motivates people to like have a well-functioning DFL party. Like, I'm not, I vote Democrat all the time, I promise. But it's hard to get inspired to want to make a political party function better. Like, I want my city to function better, my state, my country. I care about a set of policies. I don't care about Robert's rules and the rules for this or that convention. It's hard to get people to want to do that.
You know, there's definitely a lot of parts of a political party, just like there's a lot of parts to government itself. You know, John, you have served as an election judge, and that's being on the front lines and helping people get involved. And being an election judge has some of the same set of skills as leading a caucus or leading, you know, a volunteer at a convention where you have to follow rules and help people cast their ballots. I mean, it's some of the same set of skills. And there's definitely other parts of political parties, like the field campaign, getting out the vote. And that's kind of similar to community organizing with the city of Minneapolis for anytime you have community feedback on something, you know, reaching out to people, building lists, you know, getting out the interest in there. So I think, you know, bridging those different worlds and having, you know, different ways to get involved. It's not, you know, not everybody has to be a parliamentarian. Not everybody has to join the Constitution, Bylaws and Rules Committee. But there's always an open door to getting involved in some way. And maybe that is leading a phone bank. Maybe that is having a meet and greet with your city council member or your park board member or somebody like that to learn about the issues that are important to your community. As long as we are open and welcome people in, I think that's always a good place to be.
I have a couple of things that I've thought about on that topic. I mean, one, for me, it's really gratifying to come together with my neighbors who feel the same way about politics as I do. Candidates can be fleeting. Just look at that lady in the Minnesota Senate who like broke into her stepmother's home. Like, she's probably disappointing a lot of people who voted for her. So I don't know, candidates, like some candidates are around forever and are really great, but not all of them are. And I think the party endures and keeps those values going. I think if you do get involved, the resolutions are a part of conventions that I truly don't care for, but I think that is one way that delegates can actually affect change within the party. And then another thing I'll say is you don't have to go like super deep on Robert's Rules of Order or parliamentary procedure in general to have a good convention experience. I feel like an apt analogy would be like learning how to play the guitar. Like, you can play a whole bunch of songs on the guitar with just like three chords. You can play it even more with like five chords and just like kind of a basic understanding of how to play the guitar. Like, same with Robert's Rules. You don't have to know you don't have to know like the whole tome of Robert's Rules in order to be adept delegate.
You know what I know about Robert's Rules? If I say point of order, the whole convention has to stop until I release you. I control the floor. I just have to say point of order. point of order and shout that repeatedly, and I'm in control. It's a magic password, right?
I am always trying to learn a little bit more about Robert's rules and parliamentary procedure. So I have an idea that is 100% a joke, unless you guys think it's actually a good idea. And it's a podcast on Robert's Rules of Order. And I have
hosted by Josh Martin, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I should bounce this idea off of him. Would you like to hear my sample titles, or should we save that for later on?
Oh, go. Do it.
Okay. Robert says, so moved.
Okay.
Parliamentary power.
Okay.
Before we adjourn, all in favor.
Okay. We need a laugh track for this. I will really try to add a laugh track.
Okay, I've got a few more. Quorum Q&A, quorum questions, quality quorum.
Oh, these are getting worse.
This is my last, and I saved the best one for last. Gavel gab.
That sounds like a Supreme Court podcast.
There's definitely some gavel gabs happening in the United States Congress, and it's important to know a little bit of parliamentary procedure and a little bit of Robert's rules. Because what happens at, like, for example, the Minnesota State Senate right now, or at the U.S. Congress, you might know of one of the representatives wanting to have a motion to vacate the chair. That happens sometimes at DFL conventions, where a delegate will be very disappointed, like the congresswoman from Georgia was.
And what was happening at the city convention with that guy who wanted to vacate the chair? I don't even know what his issue was. He was so hyperactive that afterwards I was like, this is the guy who bullied Deborah. I remember this guy from earlier in the day. He must have been the bully guy. And I don't think
he's the guy who's bullied me in a different DFL meeting, but not at the city convention.
I've seen that guy cause trouble at multiple conventions, yeah. And he needs to be banned. Sorry, Conrad, did I interrupt where you were going with that? Otherwise,
No. I don't care to comment on that.
Okay. Okay.
Are you still taking ideas that would make conventions better?
Oh, absolutely. We can return to that train of thought here.
Yeah, let's not get returned to that. We can maybe cover that as we go along.
Okay.
I hate the DFL process with a passion. I understand intellectually why it's terrible, but also I think, like Deborah, you said something similar, and it describes how I feel. Like, we'd be in a worse place without it. If we just went to primaries, no more conventions, we'd be in a worse place, because I think it gives a reason for people to think about local candidates and issues earlier on in the year. Maybe it's not everyone is tuning in, but some people are, and that's good. And so do either of you have, you probably, Deborah, I know you agree with me. Anybody want to comment?
Was there a question there?
No, there wasn't. That's a good catch, Conrad. There was no question there.
I do think that the convention process cultivates the unique grassroots of our politics here in Minnesota. Like, if you are a delegate to a convention where a candidate is going to be endorsed and you're representing your neighbors, we live in a representative democracy, that candidate is going to call you and you have their ear for like 5 minutes to an hour and tell them everything that you like and despise about where you live and all of the laws that you think could be improved upon. And that is valuable. I think in a primary system, that candidate is just going to be mailing you like glossy flyers and not talking to you.
I was in the city of Chicago visiting my family during one of their primaries. And I remember seeing, you know, I know John Edwards makes jokes about lawn signs, but in this community, there were so many lawn signs everywhere, just taking every boulevard. And I asked my family, it's like, hey, who are you going to vote for? And they had no opinion because the candidates hadn't reached out to them and there wasn't a forum like a DFL convention to talk about the issues that mattered to them as a community. It was just, as Deborah is saying, glossy flyers that say generic things about democratic values, but don't actually, you know, differentiate between the candidates, because they're all just trying to win a primary and have a good looking name or a good looking face.
I think a lot of people are offended by the idea of a couple of hundred, like, let's face it, a lot of older white people of a certain demographic there deciding, you know, who the potential DFL endorsee is going to be. I still, despite that problem, I still think it's better we have it than we don't. But it would be nice to fix that problem. Like, it becomes an endurance contest, and who's got the time and the privilege to hang around all day trying to get a candidate endorsed? Is it simply a matter of making these things happen over a shorter period?
Well, I think to that point, yes, exactly. So whether we do it by having it through the rules process for the convention itself, or if we do it through the DFL Constitution, I think there's definitely a path forward to having conventions be either a single ballot or having ranked choice or some combination thereof, to where we just have it be quicker and have it be tabulated electronically. So it has the benefits of those virtual conventions that we had back during the pandemic, where everybody liked to be able to know that, hey, my ballot is not spoiled. It definitely has the name spelled right, all that kind of stuff. And then, still have an in-person process where we get to see our neighbors. Because I think, you know, one of the things that people like about getting involved with politics, whether it's partisan politics or community organizing in general, is that you get to meet people and you get to meet your neighbors and talk about fun stuff and also have coffee and maybe ice cream, maybe hot dogs on a summer, you know, barbecue, in the park or open streets or something like that. So these are very, community-based events. And so getting to know your neighbors and the issues that, you know, we all care about is really at the core of this whole process.
I want to give people ideas for small talk at a convention to make new friends. And I think one of the go-to lines for me, because I'm constantly picking up new friends at conventions, is to commiserate with them about how terrible the parliamentarian is, what an awful process this is. Like, I can't believe I'm doing this with my weekend. It's 65 degrees outside. Why are we here? Commiserate about how awful it is, what Conrad is putting you through as the Minneapolis DFL chair, things like that. I think it's a good way to make friends at a convention. Deborah, do you have any particular ideas for Conrad? Do you want to press him hard about reforms that you want to see, maybe things that you wrote about?
I'm excited to see Conrad as the chair. I think I've seen Conrad in leadership roles before in the party, and I think he's done a really good job. He's an excellent communicator, especially electronically, like on social media and email. So I think Conrad's going to be fantastic. And Conrad also is able to take like kind of a dry topic or a complicated topic and make it very accessible for a layperson. One thing that Conrad doesn't have any control over, this would be the CBRC or maybe even the National Party, but I would like to see the gender balance requirement or the equal division requirement abolished.
Sounds controversial. Why do you not like gender equity?
Well, first out, let me explain what the current rule is, because there is some confusion as to what the current rule is. And so I'll explain it to the best that I can. So in the Democratic Party, nationally, in all the state parties all across the country, there's a national rule, and it's called equal division, which is a little bit misnomer because it doesn't actually equally divide per se. And that's based in kind of feminism and having where we want to have affirmative action and those kind of ideals. So what the rule says, and this has changed over the years, but the current version that is called equal division, what it says is that the number of people who affirmatively call themselves male and those who affirmatively call themselves female, the difference between those two cannot be more than one in a body of people that falls under this rule. So, for example, if you have a chair and vice chair, you could have a female chair, and then you could have a male chair, or sorry, a vice chair, and then, or you could have a non-binary vice chair. So as long as the difference is not more than one, then it's all right. If you had a group of seven delegates that were elected to something, you know, at the national level, something like that, then you could have, you know, four women and three men, and that'd be fine. Or you could have three women and two men, and then other people being of other genders, non-binary. But as long as the difference was that not more than one, then that was the rule. So it's different than in the past where it was not more than a majority. But don't think about that. That's the old rule. So I just wanted to explain the rules so that people know what we mean when we talk about equal division and how that works with having chairs and vice chairs and different groups of delegates and whatnot. And, you know, I'll lend my time to Deborah to explain her position.
Well, this is the kind of stuff that will put you to sleep at a normal convention. So you're giving people the authentic convention experience here, Conrad, with your long, detailed explanations of the rules. Where were we going with this,
Deborah? Well, Deborah wants to abolish this. So why do you want to abolish it?
I want to abolish it because I think the intention of the rule was to get more. I mean, when it passed, like, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, I think the intention was to make more women have positions of leadership within the party. But I think right now it's actually a deterrent because it says that a woman can't work with another woman in a leadership position. You can't have a woman as chair and a vice chair. And we all saw at the Minneapolis convention how Brianna was treated. In front of the whole thing, there were people who got up to the microphone and asked her to say the Pledge of Allegiance louder. Like they were emotionally abusive dads.
Was that directed at her specifically? I just thought that guy was a weirdo.
Well, maybe we perceived it differently and maybe my perception is wrong. I perceived it as a criticism of Brianna, and perhaps that is unfair to the delegates who took after her at the microphone.
I took it as a criticism of all of us. And we should be clear, that guy is a candidate, a little known candidate running against Ilhan Omar. And he decided, like, the thing I'm going to do at the city convention is ask us to do the pledge again because I wasn't happy with the volume level of it the first time around. Like, come on, we did the pledge, man. Don't make us do it again. There's no better way to piss off a room full of delegates than to, like, ask us to do the thing we already did over again for some stupid reason. Peterson, right? Tim Peterson, that's the guy's name? That's who did that.
There were arguments for. There were, like, three arguments in support of him. It wasn't just him. Anyway,
the vote was very overwhelming against doing the pledge again. It was very loud and angry, like, sit down, Tim Peterson. That was the tone of voice everyone voted no with.
Anyway, I don't think that this is like a long haul project that I'm just voicing my opinion on now, but I think it would be nice if, I mean, look at, like, we've got two female senators and they do a great job. And we've got an all female city council over in St. Paul and they do a great job. So I just think it's like a little, the rule functions restrictively now. I think back when it was implemented, it was probably helpful, but I think it served its purpose.
What about men, Deborah? What about men? We're being left behind, as you point out, in St. Paul, all in all woman city council. Maybe men need the gender equality rule now.
We abolish the gender parity rule, then a man can work with another man. in a leadership position, and that might be nice also.
That's what we're all hoping for at some point in the future, a world where men can work with other men to make the decisions. Here's one, Deborah. This will be very interesting to listeners and make them glad they stayed until the end. I'm reading from the Substack called Deborah Copperood Shops at Target. And Deborah writes, I met someone last weekend, referring to the city convention, whom I'd consider to be a pretty big villain on Twitter. But in person, they were perfectly pleasant. And everyone wants to know who that person was. Who is the villain you made friends with?
I can tell you that offline. I'm not going to say it on the podcast.
That's not fair. I tease that I'm so sorry. Hard for listeners. How can listeners contact you personally to find out who you were referring to? That's how we'll
they
do
can
it.
Subscribe to my Substack, Deborah Copperood Shops at Target. Thank you so much for mentioning it so many times. I'm trying to expand my platform. And then you can send me a direct message on Substack.
Oh, okay. So people can find out. There's a good giveaway. Deborah is giving away secrets for you to subscribe to her Substack. Is this like a mommy blog? What's going on here? Shops at Target? What's going on with this? Is it really just about you shopping at Target?
So I used to, on Facebook, post pictures of like funny stuff I'd see in the aisles at Target. Like, if okay. you just go to Target, like, you know, and you shop and then you put something back where it doesn't belong, it usually makes a little funny little mm-hmm. vignette.
It's like a Twitter replacement for you. Is this where you go to put out all your weird ideas and things you saw at Target?
Totally. Totally. And I am a freelance writer. And if you are a freelance writer, you need a platform. And that. It's not something I'm super excited about doing, but this Substack is kind of fun because I can write whatever I want on there. And I'll tell you my Twitter villain secret if you subscribe.
Wow. Conrad, I have nothing left. Tell us what you have planned for the Minneapolis DFL. And I ask you not to explain any rules in great detail. No one wants to know those things. Give us like the bullet points of what you're going to do as chair of the Minneapolis DFL.
Yeah, so one of the first things that we're working on is we are scheduling meetings with the Biden-Harris campaign here in Minnesota, which is starting to ramp up. This is being recorded on Tuesday, April 30th, and right now it's a public announcement that there's a couple of offices that are funded, and they're trying to lease some spaces and start actually having real offices in Minneapolis and St. Paul open to volunteers. So that's really exciting. So we'll be meeting with the team this coming week and next week and things like that. And the same thing for what's called the coordinated campaign. So that's run out of the state party. But similarly, they try to elect Democrats all across the state. And that's really important because we have to defend our trifecta, and that means defending the Minnesota House. Of course, Minneapolis is, very democratically leaning, but we have a lot of volunteers who can help out in other districts across the state, both door knocking and phone banking and things like that.
So now that you've ascended the heights of the Minneapolis DFL, can you pledge that your stepmom will never trip over you getting out of bed?
I think that situation requires some nuance.
You don't have to respond with sincerity. I apologize for throwing that joke at you, Conrad. We don't have to.
I don't see it as a joke.
Okay. Well, it is hilarious. It is objectively hilarious. As a Democrat, I'm allowed to say that, Conrad. Free speech. And I'm sure she's going through some personal difficulties. I'm sure. But we are allowed to laugh at the hilarious circumstances there. Come on. We're doing recommendations now. Deborah, do you have anything to recommend aside from your Substack, Deborah Copperood Shops at Target?
Well, I'm going to do a shameless self-promo. After first, I'm sorry for laughing so heartily at that poor lady Senate. I'm sure she is going through a lot. Okay, but to bring it back to me, I'm teaching a class on podcasting with Minneapolis Public Schools Ooh. Community Education that starts next Tuesday. I think there's still spots in it. It's at Ella Baker on Tuesday nights starting at 6:30. It's really fun. It's 4 weeks, 2 hours per week. And I have had a podcast for a long time called It's My Screen Time Too. And I really enjoy teaching people how to start their own podcast. So if you are listening to this and you're interested, sign up.
I want to do a whole episode on how to do a podcast because this makes me feel self-conscious every time you mention that you do podcasts, Deborah, because I feel like I'm breaking all the rules.
Oh, I don't think so.
I'm the bad boy of podcasting. Good. Oh, you think I'm doing all right?
Yeah.
Okay. What's your first tip, Deborah? Somebody says, I want to start a podcast. What's the basics here?
I would say narrow your topic.
Okay.
And make it as specific as possible. Like, you do, I would say, politics podcast, but it's like very niche. It's very focused on the city of Minneapolis and local elections. And I think that specificity is good.
Okay, that's a good pointer. Find your particular area and do that very well. Keep it small. That's the key to the success of Wedge Live is it's theoretically only about the Wedge neighborhood of Minneapolis, although not so true anymore. Good advice. Conrad, do you have any good recommendations for listeners? What should people be doing?
Well, one thing that I know that helps me is I listen to classical Minnesota public radio when I am trying to wind down. Other than the kind of DJs or, you know, they're, you know, people who are doing the interludes or whatnot, it's usually not really that much lyrics, and it can be kind of just very calming. And then when I wake up in the morning, they play the news at like 6 a.m., 7 a.m., and 8 a.m., depending on when I get up. And it can be kind of nice to, that's something I grew up with when I was young. My dad had a clock radio that would, you know, buzzer at, you know, 7 a.m. and then the news was next. And that was one part of my growing up that I still have even in the digital internet Apple Music days.
Okay. Thank you, Conrad. This has been the Wedge Life Podcast. I'm your host, John Edwards. My guests have been Conrad Zbykowski, who is the new chair of the Minneapolis DFL, and Deborah Copperood of Deborah Copperood Shops at Target, which is a wonderful new Substack. Is it new, Deborah?
It's pretty new, yeah.
It's pretty new. And occasionally writes in Racket. You write some things for Racket?
That's right.
And as I said, I'm John Edwards, and I appreciate that all of you have stayed to the end for an episode about the DFL process. Thank you for listening.
This is a real thing.
None of you have the balls to stop this.
Going on today?
We're in the Wedge neighborhood right now. 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 Right now.